This is a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. You're listening to the tale of three podcasters walking across Scotland during the 30th anniversary of the RAB TGO Challenge. Part 13.
This podcast is just one from a special series produced from a wealth of recordings made in May 2009 during the 30th anniversary of the RAB TGO Challenge. Recording the event were Andy Howell, Shirley Worrell and me, Bob Cartwright. We were just three of the 360 or so challengers who were walking the unsupported 200 miles from the west to the east coast of Scotland. This was the 30th year of the event, sponsored by RAB and, of course, TGO Magazine, who have been behind the challenge ever since its inception in 1980. The framework and principle is totally unique. It isn't a race or competition of any kind. The objective is to foster good fellowship amongst walkers within the framework of a challenging 200-mile expedition. This is a backpacking trip, and everyone carries what they need for the duration, picking up the occasional food parcel along the way. The start consists of a series of sign-out locations on the west coast, anywhere from Torridon in the north down to Ardrishaig in the south. Each challenger, solo, couple or group makes their way via a high route, a low route or the mixture of the two across Scotland to finish anywhere between Arbroath and Fraserburgh on the east coast. There's a set two-week window to do this in, and each participant submits their route for inspection prior to departure for safety and advice reasons. The places are normally limited to 300. However, on this 30th anniversary, this was increased to 360. Details about the future events, entry forms, past stories and photographs can be found in the October issue of TGO Magazine. Plus, in recent years, there's an ever-growing online library of podcasts, diaries and blogs from numerous challengers dotted around the web. Each participant makes the challenge as easy or as hard as they wish. The extremes can be a remote high route, carrying everything you need, navigating your way across wild country, taking in the magic vista which only Scotland can offer, and not seeing another soul for days on end. Or a route taking in the many social meeting places, not camping at all and using established warm, dry accommodation all the way. Most people do a mixture of the two in different forms, depending on the ever-changing conditions an event like this can throw at you. On this 30th anniversary, three of us took audio recorders with us to share our experiences and those of others we met along the way. Rose and I started from Oban, Andy Howell and his partner Kate from Torridon, and for the first time this year, Shirley Worrell was to give us a solo female perspective, also starting from Torridon. We were all aiming for different finish points on the east coast via completely different routes. And so this is our story. And so, finally, we reach the end of our journey. And thanks to the changes forced upon us by the weather of the previous days, we arrive at St. Cyrus, the simplest of endpoints. Shirley, on the other hand, at the very last minute, changes direction with John Hesp to end somewhere unique to her. Of course, Andy is still hard at work socialising in the Park Hotel bar, having finished a day before us. One of the fellow challengers he does chat with is Colin Ibbotson to discuss his lightweight approach, a philosophy which still seems to be frowned upon in certain quarters within the challenge group. Surely, if you carry less, you enjoy it more. So why carry a heavy load?
One of the highlights of the challenge for me is the chance every year to sit down and have a chat with my old mate Colin Ibbotson, who must be now Britain's most famous ultralight hiker, simply because we could spend hours and hours discussing gear, and this year's Ibbotson solution is just as light as ever. Colin, you had a good trip across?
I've had a fantastic trip. Obviously, it's been quite challenging this year compared to the previous two. We've had, obviously, the real strong winds. We've had heavy rain, but we've also had some good, strong sunny spells as well. But it's definitely been a good challenge for lightweight gear.
Now, that's a good introduction, really, to the gear, because it's held up well against all the odds. We've had some pretty atrocious weather and more rain than you would think is possible. So let's start with a tarp here, because last year you used a Cuban fibre tarp, which didn't work out that well. So you've gone back to revisit the whole tarp solution this year, haven't you?
I have, and obviously the problems I had last year with the Cuban fibre have been well publicised in some places, and whether that was the material or whether it was just the design of that particular tarp, I'm not quite sure yet, and I will definitely experiment a bit further with that. But this year was all about stability, trying to get a tarp as stable as it possibly can in our conditions. And I think the extra guying systems I've added to this year's tarp have made a huge difference. And if you look at the tarp now, it's absolutely rock solid and very, very taut.
Okay, so this is a catenary cut tarp, which has a very distinctive profile, and I guess, unlike flat tarps, you can only really put it up one way. But as you said, it's absolutely rigid. It's sinylon, but it's got more tie-out points than you would normally see on a commercial catenary cut tarp, and some new extra ones that you put on yourself that really I've not seen before.
I got the idea from Henry Shires. Certainly, at the rear of his tarps, he uses a three guy system. Now, I've put that to the front and rear of my tarp, and it gives you like three ridge lines through the material, and it makes the whole tarp a lot stiffer. So I've got a total of 10 guy points all the way around, and 10 pegging points all the way around. So you can really strap the thing down, and no matter how windy it's been, I've never felt like it was going to let me down, not once.
No, it doesn't even ripple, does it? It's rock solid. So, obviously, you're happy with this as a solution. It is a sinylon tarp, which, for most of us, how heavy does the tarp and the pegs and the guys weigh?
The shelter system is 600 grams, and just over 600 grams, 638, I think, is the exact figure. But that includes the tarp, the guys, the pegs, a ground sheet, and also a bivy bag. So that's everything.
Now, for most of us, we'd be quite happy with that, but I guess the challenge is on next time to get it even lower.
Yeah, it is. I set myself a limit of 600 grams, so obviously that was 38 grams. You know, maybe not important to some, but and to me it is. And I'm sure I can crawl, you know, grab those grams back from somewhere. And I've got some ideas, so next year's will be slightly different again.
And are you going to have another crack at Cuban fibre?
I will, but whether you'll see it next year, I don't know yet. I'm still a little uncertain about Cuban fibre. I don't know whether I'm ready to try it yet. I will do at some point, but maybe not next year.
You're a great fan of Ron Bell in the States, who has a small company called Mountain Lowell Designs. And, I mean, this is a Mountain Lowell tarp, but you've got some other kit from them that's very innovative and very lightweight.
Yeah, I've got one of his Profit rucksacks, which is slightly different to the version he makes now. Mine's made out of spinnaker and silk nylon, whereas now he uses a much tougher Dyneema fabric, which I'm not convinced is a good way to go. But obviously, you know, Ron knows his market, and he thinks that's the way to go.
But he will still make a pack if you ask him out of those materials.
Oh, he will. Yes, Ron's very flexible. He will do whatever you want, basically. He'll, whatever additions you want, he's capable of doing.
So how big is that pack, in capacity terms?
It's around about 40 litres, but I never fill it more than about 30, I would say. And even then, I leave my sleeping bag pretty much lofting in the bottom, so I can get away with a lot smaller pack than that.
Okay, so that's a sleeping bag, and quite an interesting bivy as well.
The bivy is a standard sole bivy, but it's got a Cuban fibre base, which knocks about 50 grams off the weight of the standard bivy. I've been very, very, very impressed with that bivy. It's the first time I'd used one of their breathable bivvies. I've got one of their waterproof ones, but not a breathable one. And it's been very, very flexible.
Right, so there we are. That's the Mountain Lowell design stuff. And you know, at home listening to this, you can find Ron's stuff by googling Mountain Laurel Designs, and he's got a whole range of new shelters. But one of the most interesting things for me on the site is that he details all of the merits of the various fabrics that he uses. And I don't know, maybe we're just gearheads really, but I find that quite fascinating.
I do too, because that's about the only place where you can find a list of all the fabrics and advantages, disadvantages, weights, etc., etc. It is a good way to actually make a decision on what material you're going to use for your next shelter.
Okay, now let's move on just a bit. Now, this year you've I was very surprised to see you've got an inflatable Thermarest. What's the story behind that?
I know, it's shocking, isn't it? Absolutely shocking that I've gone down the Thermarest route. But we all like comfort, and up to now Thermarests have just been too heavy to even think about. But there's a new Thermarest, and this is the it's an extra small ProLite. It's new on the market, and it weighs 230 grams, which is light enough to interest me. It's actually lighter than the new small Neo Air, which is very popular at the moment. And when I saw it, I thought, you know, that kind of weight, I've got to give it a go.
And has it been comfortable?
It has been comfortable, but whether it's worth, you know, being more than twice the weight of a standard foam mat, I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah, my small inflatable mat went foot just before the challenge, and I just bought my old Gossamer Gear night light three-quarter thing, which is just, you know, solid foam with eggshell shave on the top, and I have to say, thinking back, it's been perfectly acceptable and comfortable all the way across.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It's only when you get a really rough place that you really notice the difference that a Thermarest can make. So, as I said, I'm not 100% sure whether it'll be with me next year, because it's taken my pack weight over the 2.5 kg, which is my limit that I usually set myself. So it's actually 2.58. You know, it may only be 80 grams, but, you know, it still pushed me over what my target.
Now, a lot of the first-timers, many of whom have come down a kind of lighter weight route than usual, have been really keen to meet you, and they've all been struck by what they all describe as Colin's sleeping system. So, obviously, that's the mat. But, I mean, you've got to keep yourself a little bit warmer than the rest of us. You've described the bivvy. But tell us about these down pyjamas, as some people have called them.
Well, I've been called a teddy bear at one point, and I stripped the sleeping bag down to two parts. You've got the sleeping bag itself, which is a very light PhD bag at under 500 grams, and then I've also got a down hooded vest and a pair of down trousers. The idea with that is that you can move around camp without getting cold, and they do make a huge difference. I know a lot of people on this challenge. I can think of four or five people who said that next year they will have a set of these down trousers, because they make a massive difference, and they're so light.
There is a view in the States, certainly, that in the kind of wet conditions that we have in Scotland, that somehow down doesn't work as efficiently as man-made insulation, but you haven't found that problem.
No, I think most of us in the UK have used down for many, many years, and probably always will. I've had no problems with down over the years. It's almost impossible to get it wet enough to, you know, make a massive difference to the insulation. I really don't know what all the fuss is about.
So down is still the king then, really. So moving on then, the other thing that always catches people's eye is the cooking system, which we have here, which is completely of your own design and quite ingenious, I think. So come on, what have we got here? This looks like a, I don't know, piece of aluminium foil from a roasting tin from Tesco's.
That's exactly what it is, yeah. It's a piece of aluminium foil from a roasting tin at Tesco's, yeah. It's basically a windshield that uses a peg to support, a peg and the handles of the pot to support the pot. And in the bottom you put a double layer of aluminium foil, and on top of that you put a little Esbit block, or half an Esbit block. And that is all it is. It's so simple. There's nothing to go wrong.
Now, I've been very impressed with this, because when we were out hiking in Snowdonia a few months ago, or last year now, or whatever, I was using a little tiny diminutive meth stove, and you were using this stove with your Esbit blocks, and I have to say you were tucking into your food faster than I was. And I'm a bit surprised by that, but do you think Esbits are going to become increasingly popular?
I don't see any reason why not. I know I've since made a second stove, which is with a lighter pot, and that hasn't worked as well. So I think things have to be... The science of it is very exact, and there's not much margin of getting things right or wrong. I'm not quite sure why the second stove didn't work as well. I need to look into that. But this one certainly is very effective.
So maybe the thickness of the titanium is...
Well, I think it's maybe more to do... I think it's to do with how much air is getting to the fuel. There's much tighter tolerances in the new stove, and I think maybe it's choking the fuel, and it's not burning as efficiently, perhaps.
Now, you use an MSR titanium kettley thing, I think is the technical term we all use for them now. But you're quite happy with that, and it's the only pot you carry.
It's the only pot I carry. I have actually got a new pot, again by Mountain Laurel, which is same size but lighter. But unless I can get the stove to work with it, then it's not going to get used.
Okay, and again, the pot cozy system is something that has become pretty widespread in use now. Now, most of us use a kind of aluminium, double-skinned aluminium foil, but you've created your own more sturdy pot cozy system.
It's a very simple foam pot cozy made out of standard a camping mattress base that I had laying around. I think it's going to last a lot longer than the bubble wrap style ones that you see around, and it's probably even better for insulation wise as well, I would say. And a good thing with this is you can actually eat having the food still insulated, because it doesn't actually cover the top of the pot. You can take the lid off and you can still eat, and everything stays nice and warm while you're eating.
Mm. For those that haven't come across the pot cozy system before, it saves a lot of fuel, whether it's gas or mess or whatever, because you just bring the food to a boil, put it in the pot cozy and leave it for, I don't know, 20-25 minutes, and it rehydrates perfectly well, and it's piping hot when you've finished.
You should only really use your stove to boil the water. All the cooking should take place in a pot cozy. There's no point wasting fuel during the cooking process when your pot cozy can do the job, you know, for no cost.
Okay, so let's go on to clothes now, walking clothing. I must admit, you've put me onto my favourite item of this year's challenge, which is the Paramo Third Element jacket. And there are a lot of people who think that Paramo has no place in a ultralight hiking gear list, but certainly in Scottish conditions, it's a phenomenal jacket.
Oh, it's got to be one of the kit finds, sort of, you know, of the last couple of years for me.
So describe it to us, Colin.
It's a jacket where you can remove the arms and the hood. It's in two parts. When it's all put together, it's fully waterproof, as is any Paramo jacket. But when you take the arms off, you then got all the extra ventilation that brings. I've never had to take this jacket off on this trip. I can't think of any other jacket that could do that with.
And it gives you, you know, you've got a kind of gilet to wear on normal hiking days, but you don't need a mid-layer. You can take that into the pub or a cafe or something like that, can't you? And it's just much more flexible. And I suspect this is going to become quite a cult item amongst backpackers in Europe.
There's certainly a few more on the challenge this year compared to last year, and I really recommend anybody who is interested in Paramo, who finds it just too warm at this time of year, they should really take a good close look at this jacket.
Yeah, I was talking to Paramo at the outdoor show, and they were saying to me they were surprised that it hadn't taken off more quickly than it had, but I certainly can't recommend it highly enough.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I think we were both in agreement over this one. It is the perfect jacket as far as I'm concerned.
And what else are you wearing?
I've got my usual Montane Terra Stretch trousers. I love these trousers. They're not 100% windproof, but they're very, very close. And I treat them in the Nikwax the same as you treat your Paramo stuff, which makes them almost waterproof by themselves. But then when I combine them with my knee-length windproof shorts, which are also treated in the Nikwax, not one single drop of water has passed through those two.
It's a good tip, that, isn't it? Because the, Montane windproofs I've been using, I haven't cut them off at the knees like you have, but they're pretty light anyway. But I treated them in knickknacks, and we've had a lot of rain on this challenge, and it was only really the last day that I could see that the waterproofing had kind of been washed out of them. But it's a pretty effective solution, that.
It is. As I say, the two layers together are effectively 100% waterproof.
And work very similar to normal Paramo trousers.
They do, yeah, and of course, being two breathable levels, you don't suffer any condensation, but being able to pull the windproofs on over your trousers in a real cold wind as well makes a massive difference.
Yeah, I use the light wind trousers over the Palmer stretch pants, which work in a similar way, I guess. Now, shoes?
Shoes, Innovates as usual for me, but I'm using a slightly different model. I'm using the Terrox this year, which I've never used before. I found I've been very, very pleased with them. They're very similar to the Flyrox I used last year, but slightly better padded, I would say. The only small problem I've had is a bit of rubbing around the ankles, which I've not experienced with Innovates before. So whether that was the exceptionally wet weather or whether these are slightly wider around my heel, I'm not quite sure, so I need to look into that.
Yeah, I've had a similar feeling this year, which I suspect is something to do with all of the rain, but I think these are slightly new design, I think, and I think that they've changed something somewhere, but they're still pretty good shoes. I think that's about it, isn't it? Is there anything else that we've missed out, or any other tips that you want to share with us?
No, I think we've covered everything. We haven't covered the water bag, of course, which has always got interesting comments.
Now, it has to be said that for a lot of people, the water bag was a step too far. That, you know, the platypus water holder was just too heavy.
Well, it wasn't. It's the principle, really. If you can have something that's half the weight and twice the capacity, then, you know, why wouldn't you go for it?
Now, what we have here is something that looks suspiciously like a supermarket bag. In fact, it's got Tesco's written all over it. And a Dyneema cord at the top. So what on earth have you done there?
It's exactly what you said it is. It is a Tesco bag, and it has got a bit of cord around it. But the main advantage that this has got, apart from obviously the weight and the capacity, is the carrying handles. On a platypus bag, if you have to walk a few hundred metres with your platypus water container, it's not very comfortable to carry. But, you know, these handles just make everything so easy. And as far as I'm concerned, I have got a lot of stick over this bag.
When we say it's Tesco's bag, it's one of those sandwich bags that you get in one of those rolls of bags, isn't it?
It's a freezer bag, and it's meant for storage of frozen food.
And it hasn't leaked, I suppose I've got to ask that.
It hasn't leaked, no. This is still the prototype I'm using here, which is only 9 months old now, and it's not leaked yet.
Okay, well, let's forget gear for a little bit. So, you alluded at the beginning to the weather of this year's challenge, which has been a bit... We've had probably some of the best weather we've had for a long time and some of the worst as well. But just looking back on the whole 2 weeks, what have been the highlights?
Oh, I would say crossing the monoliths, I would say, when we had that perfect, perfect weather, just clear blue skies, relatively dry bogs and wildlife everywhere. To me, I think that was the highlight.
Yeah, certainly it's got me thinking that next time, my next route will take a longer, more prolonged line through the monolith. I think it was absolutely fabulous. And again, as always, the social side of the challenge is... comes to the fore, doesn't it?
That's the reason I come. It's the same reason everybody comes here, I would say, because you can do a 2 week walk across Scotland yourself anytime, but we all come for the social.
Well, everybody's been in good spirits, laughing about your kit and very pleased they've met you, some of the first timers, but I have to say there were quite a few tarp systems on this challenge, and I wouldn't mind betting that in the next couple of years we're beginning to see more of the Colin system creeping into more everyday use.
Yeah, there's certainly, I've seen three tarps on this challenge, and I think there's a fourth as well. So it's good to see that some people are trying new things.
Okay, well, Colin, thanks very much for that, and we'll talk again soon.
Well, hello, it's 10 to 11, the final day, for me at least, of TJ Challenge 2009. I'm walking along the road from the North Waterbridge campsite, which is a few miles further on from Edsel, with John Hesp, and we reckon, well, he reckons, because he's the navigator, that we're only a couple of miles away. It's an absolutely beautiful morning again, but a strange mixture of weather we've had on the challenge this year. Yesterday was lovely, and today's absolutely beautiful. Sunny and gorgeous, and John's just stopping to smell some lilac. I've been smelling lilac as I've walked along the path, because I love the smell of lilac, but so many the trees aren't centred these days. Anyway, was that one centred?
Oh, it was beautiful.
Okay, there's one that I've missed, but I'll get the next one. Anyway, yes, so a couple of miles to go, and because it's a beautiful day, I'll see how I feel when we get there, but I might just jump in again, as I did back in 2005, because that was such an exciting experience once I'd actually got out and got dry. Lots of us had a great evening on the campsite last night at North Water Bridge. It's a very nice campsite, nice toilet facilities, lovely flat camping. My tent went up like an absolute dream for once, everything in line, and it was beautiful and dry, and all my kit seemed nice and neat inside, which isn't something that often happens in my tent. But anyway, it was a good evening. Too much red wine was consumed, but that's almost mandatory on the penultimate night of the challenge. I've just been speaking to Colin Ibbotson. He's already in Montrose, setting up his tarp, and no doubt he'll be wandering back over to the park shortly to have a drink and sit outside and greet people as they come in. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing old friends, some of whom I've seen several times on this trip, and others I probably haven't seen since 2006. I'm not sure if I've got a place on the dinner yet, because I was too disorganised to remember to send off the form in time. But I know I'm on the waiting list, and it doesn't matter if I don't get to the dinner. I'll go to the bar, and then maybe go to the chippy, and then back to the bar. So I'll record something else once we actually get to the coast, or perhaps as we're waiting at the bus stop. But in the meantime, well, if John doesn't mind, can you tell us what does it feel like to be a first-time challenger approaching the coast?
Really exciting. Right. You can see the sea ahead, sparkling blue. It's sunny, and it feels worth walking 200 miles just to experience this.
And is this what you'd anticipated when you decided that you were going to apply for the challenge?
Being so excited?
Yeah.
I hadn't anticipated this bit of country being so nice.
No.
I was expecting a dreary agricultural wasteland.
But it's actually beautiful, isn't it?
It is, it's great, yeah.
Okay, well, that's it from John and me for now. So, as I say, probably record something else later on. But for now, goodbye.
Well, it's Thursday morning, our last day as we approach the coast from North Water Bridge campsite. It's a lovely morning, actually. Fairly, slightly cool, but a glorious sunshine, and we're all strolling along, having left the campsite sort of halfway with a bunch of other people around 8 o'clock-ish. Some people left earlier, and a few are going to be leaving a bit later. Very fertile land around here. See the oilseed rapes just coming out into full flower. And the various buds blooming and all the different foliage, making it quite a pleasant end. Had a very enjoyable evening last night. It was, again, fairly sunny, although cool, and everybody was sitting out around the campsite chatting and socialising, which made for a very pleasant last evening. But we're all sort of making a beeline for St. Cyrus or somewhere around St. Cyrus to finish the actual challenge. I can see there's a string of people ahead of us, dotted over the sort of kilometre or so ahead of us, and there's also a few dotted behind us, so we're all following in each other's footsteps. So we'll pick up when we actually get to the coast, but for the time being, it's just a couple of hours of road trudge, as you can hear from the clicking clacking of the walking poles behind me, until we actually get there. But all in all, a very pleasant morning and quite a pleasant ending to the 2 weeks.
Well, 11:15 on the final day, and as it turns out, as is often the case when I'm walking, I haven't actually come down to the place that I'd intended to go to, which was St. Cyrus, but in fact a much prettier place, a place I haven't been to before. And I'm walking now with John along a little yellow road on the map, passing Eskew Farm B&B on the way to the nature reserve just south of St. Cyrus at a place called, well, near a place called Nether Warburton. So I'm not sure, we are going to go down to the beach. I'm not sure if there'll be some conveniently situated rocks where I can sort of dump my pack and change into my sleepy clothes to jump into the sea. But I'll see in due course, but it's still a beautiful day. And I suppose that, I don't know, I'm sure that within half an hour we'll be there. And then I suppose that within an hour or so after that we'll be in Montrose, lining up to shake hands with Roger. And I hear that this year there's a little bottle of whiskey, thank you, in addition to the badge and the certificate. So Not much further to go now. Okay, so another update later on. Shirley here with John Hesp at the beach at the nature reserve at, I can't remember what it's called now. Can you remember what it was called?
Well, St. Cyrus.
Yes, near St. Cyrus, somewhere a little bit south of that. It's absolutely fantastic. I don't know whether you can hear the waves breaking on the beach in the background, but they are breaking on the beach. It's a beautiful golden blue and sunny day. Little tufty clouds in the sky. There's people out walking their dogs. We've been down for a bit of a paddle in the water, and it was absolutely bloody freezing, so paddle is as far as we got. And we've just been thinking back over the challenge and trying to work out what some of our best moments have been. John, what about you?
I think the moment I'll probably remember is struggling along the Rosh Fen Ridge with Ian Cottrell in thick cloud and hail and snow and having a clue where we're going and sliding about all over the place. That'll certainly I'll remember that all my life, but... another moment was trying to cross Blackwater Dam, which I'd been told I could cross the top of, and it was just water pouring over the top. Mm. And I had to walk along the bottom with the showers of water coming down on me, so that was quite exciting. And it's been like that all the way, just interesting little moments which I'll remember forever.
I sadly discovered when I tried to think back to what had been my most exciting moment of the entire trip, decided that it was probably when the band played the Woohoos at the Bash in Braemar on the Saturday night, because that was tremendously exciting. But there have been so many fantastic walking moments, but I think probably the best walking experience for me on the trip was when Colin Ibbotson and I walked out of Aviemore, and we walked along Glen Eynach. And we walked up the side of the very steep mountain and through a corrie, and I'd looked at it so many times on the map, afraid that I wouldn't actually be able to get up onto the Cairngorm Plateau and then drop down to Corrible Bothy. But it was possible. It was possible to do it. It was an absolutely beautiful day, and there was the Cairngorm Plateau stretching out ahead of me. And for some reason, although I knew it was called the Cairngorm Plateau, it hadn't actually occurred to me that that's precisely what it was. But it was wonderful. The walk down to Corrible Bothy took a little longer than we'd expected, but then the camp outside was another fantastic time, because I've looked at the Corrible Bothy on the map so many times and read so much of the sort of legend and history and lore that surrounds that area. It was absolutely wonderful to camp outside. So, well, here we are. I suppose we're not quite at the end of another challenge, because, of course, there's the journey to Montrose still to go, and then there's the meeting up with old friends there, and drink in the bar, possibly the dinner tonight, and that's all to come. But the walk itself is now completed. So congratulations, John, on completing your first challenge.
Congratulations, Shirley.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been brilliant.
And so, we have completed the road walk, got through to St. Cyrus, and we're just making the last 100 metre walk past primary school, as I'm sure you've guessed. The sea is directly ahead of us, and we're just browsing the road now. And there's church, scaffolding all around it being done up. Oh, looks a bit on our left.
Challenges in the front of us, just dipping down and, over the crest, and a pile behind us.
Half dozen, I think we've all said, right, this'll do. Weather forecast we've heard from the locals is lightning and thunderstorms this afternoon, which seems pretty unusual. Not heard of that before in Scotland.
No, never. It's a beautiful sunny day now, though. Gorgeous.
Yep, and the kids are doing what kids do best, kicking balls around and enjoying themselves, which is great. So, that's been 13 days, is it?
Yep.
13 days of walking and a bit of resting and all kinds of weather. Pretty enjoyable on the whole, would you say?
Yeah, I think I've managed to be across Scotland tick-free.
Well, that's an achievement for you, isn't it?
It is. I'm really impressed with myself.
The name Tiki Rose no longer exists. She's shaken off the ghost. And the expanse of sea is now opening in front of us with sunshine beating down, a cool sea breeze. Montrose far over to our right-hand side. A couple of tankers out in the distance, and very little to our left, apart from ploughed fields. It's quite a pleasant ending, this, although it involves a relative amount of road walking, but so do most endings, really. The countryside suddenly finishes and suburbia takes over. Yesterday seemed to be a day of
listening to people on mobile phones, messages coming through, sounds of roaring traffic instead of tumbling brooks and streams. And it's sort of like suburbia rushes at you, doesn't it?
It does indeed, but skylarks have stayed with us.
Yes, yeah, I don't know if you can hear that. There is one actually in the background at the moment. Stayed with us all day long, which has been really pleasant. So we're now reaching the chair at 11 o'clock in the morning. So it's been, what, 3 hours walk? Steady, easy walk. We've all got a few foot aches and pains.
It's quite funny, some of the locals too have actually come out to greet us and asked how we're doing and how the trip's been. So they're well
aware.
Familiar with the whole procedure these days.
Well done, Rosie.
And you, well done.
Well done, Peter. Congratulations. Well, the beach is looking welcoming today. A bit far down, but welcoming. And here's the two bothy boys have just arrived. Congratulations, Lee.
Yeah, and yourself, Bob.
Well done.
Yourself.
Well done.
Congratulations, Rosie.
Finally made it out of the pub.
Yes. I'm not doing this ever again. This is my last.
This is definitely your last.
I'm not putting my body through this.
Yeah.
But we're not quite there yet.
Not quite. You're going to be going down to the sea, are we?
Yeah.
I hope we're taking the packs with us and doing it properly, unlike these people have left them behind.
Yeah.
Right, so it's
down to the beach.
50-odd metres down to the beach, quick streak into the sea, and then... and then make our way back. So that pretty well wraps up the walking, I think. I need to put the mic away because I need both hands going down this track. Yeah, hands out. Oi. I think that skinny dipping idea is definitely out the window. Thank you very much, Sonny.
I think there's two on here.
Okay, let's go picture of you two as well then. With the sea as well, just to prove it. Got to get up to your knees though.
Includes the journey taken by our three podcasters on the 30th anniversary TGO Challenge 2009. For more information about future challenge events, make sure you pick up a copy of the October issue TGO Magazine. Find out how easy it is to subscribe to all our free programmes. Visit our website at theoutdoorstation.co.uk or look us up on Facebook.